listening to Castrol CarCast on Podcast One.
Well, a show jam-packed with lots of info about cars, auctions, race cars.
A little more Monterey recap stuff.
A fond memory of a fallen comrade, Jesse Combs, as well, sadly, and many other topics. First, Tommy John, lots of underwear brands claim to be big on comfort. So why are 75% of men and women dissatisfied with their underwear? Well, they haven't tried Tommy John. Over 7 million pairs sold. 96% of their customer ratings are 4 stars and above. They are the best. I wear them religiously. The legs don't ride up. The waistbands don't roll down. They got the quick draw fly. They got the feather light fabric. It's guaranteed zero visibility panty lines for the women. All backed by the best pair you'll ever wear, or it's free guarantee. This stuff is the best. You will not go back to what you're currently wearing. I wear them every single day. They're great if you're active and moving around. And if you like driving, they're great. They don't ride up on
you. The gym.
Tommy John, no adjustment needed, right, man?
Yeah, hurry to TommyJohn.com/CarCast and get 20% off your first order. That's TommyJohn.com/CarCast for 20% off. TommyJohn.com/CarCast.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get on. Trust me, get on. Mandate, get on. Welcome to CarCast. I'm Adam Carolla. That's Matt, the moderator, DeAndrea, over there. And it's Castrol CarCast. Thank you very much. The Portland World of Speed Motorsports Museum, that is tonight, if you guys want to come out. We're doing the car show, then we're doing a live CarCast, and we have Mario Andretti there as well.
Fun. Yeah.
And that's all good. Something, I don't know why, in no particular order. I were talking about on the last pod, we're talking about doing my tank slapper on the Porsche, mm-hmm. and I was mentioning that it was warmer during the afternoon session, and that I thought it had more grip out there, and then somebody wrote something, and it was like, hey, dummy, everyone knows a hot track's less slippery, blah, blah. It's more slippery, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, they're just doing what they're doing. But, and I don't know when it gets to that point, but I will tell you this. The morning session, they gave us 2 warm-up laps.
Right.
To get heat into the tires. The afternoon session, they gave us 1 lap. Basically, what they're conceding is you're going to have less traction in the morning when it's cold.
Right.
So thus we'll give you 2 warm-up laps. Of course, I kind of miss that part. They don't tell you or anything. They just walk by with a dry race board. They just walk in front of you. And if you're not looking up, I sort of looked up. I saw 2 something. I was like, I don't know what that
is. Yeah, and that could have been 2 minutes because they do that too.
But I will say, folks, or a caller or a tweeter who chimed in, you obviously when it gets real hot, but when it's cold, the morning session presumably had less grip than the afternoon
session.
Sure,
there's a sweet spot you need to be in.
Right. And I'm not saying the track was hot in the afternoon. I'm saying in the morning it was cold. They gave us 2 warm-up laps because they give you the guys with the slicks 2 warm-up laps if it's cold or a little misty out there. And the afternoon session, they gave you 1. So, but basically, their calculation is you're going to have more traction this session.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah. Makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Hot track expands and brings oil to the surface. Yeah. And I agree that a cold track is slippery. A hot track is slippery. But this wasn't a hot track. It was 75 degrees outside. It was nice.
Yeah.
It should have been more than the morning session.
Right.
That's where my head was at. Anyway, you're driving the Rolls-Royce what?
The Cullinan, the SUV.
The Cullinan.
Yeah. We got into this quite a bit in detail earlier in the week on the show.
And no, it's actually next week.
Oh, yeah. Next week, we're going to mm-hmm. get into more details next week.
Right.
We keep recording all these shows. I don't know what order they go in.
Sure.
You and I drove the Rolls-Royce. We took it up to Monterey and back a few years ago. And it's fantastic. What you need to do is first you start with – as a press car, we're judging the car. Mm-hmm. So you kind of have to remove what you think people will think of you in this car,
mm-hmm.
right? And then right. and then just start focusing on the car.
Mm-hmm.
And when you do that, you're like, oh, I get it. It's the Rolls-Royce is the best driving, the best riding car out there. That magic carpet ride
mm-hmm.
that they sort of claim to have, this what they call it, is the best out there, using airbags and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And the SUV is the same. I'm sure it has some sort of off-road capabilities because they need to test for all that.
Sure.
And maybe in the Middle East, that becomes more important than it does in Beverly Hills.
Right.
But it's fantastic. It's fantastic. You get in, you hit the button, the doors close, the doors open. You don't have to do it yourself. And heated and cooled seats and massaging seats. And I know a lot of cars have that, but...
Is it the best SUV out there?
It's the nicest riding SUV out there. If you want to get something sportier, you could go with the Bentley Bentayga,
mm-hmm.
or even more so sporty is a Range Rover SVR. That thing's a rocket ship. But
this thing
glides over the road.
How's the look?
I don't mind it. Like, I think I like the look. It's very much a Rolls-Royce, and
yeah.
it gets a lot of attention. It certainly gets a lot of attention, even in a dark metallic gray.
I didn't really walk around it and really examine it, but I had a glimpse or like a little bit of a picture of, in England, they have the old style cabs running around.
Yeah.
And it has a little bit of that
there is,
which is, I think it's just England. I don't know where else it is. I think they kind of do a thing for like a London sort of thing where they like they have a newer cab that has an older retro kind of 50s, 40s cab.
It's got to be like the same design they've been building for 100 years.
They're called a hackney carriage.
They've been re-whatevered, but it's sort of like when Chrysler was bringing back a PT Cruiser or something. It's like a little bit of a reimagined version of, or like when Ford did the new Thunderbird in 03 or something.
Yeah.
It was like, had an element of, oh, this is the old one, but it's brought back. But if you show the Rolls and you show that Hackneyed or whatever it was, whatever.
Hackney carriage. Yeah,
Hackney carriage.
Yeah.
I didn't stop and really stop on it. I just sort of looked at it once. It's got elements of that in it, which for me didn't work. But it's a Rolls. It looks like a Rolls. I think we're living in a world where, you know, you drive around and you see the new Alfa Romeo or Maserati, whatever, and they're starting to turn into Camrys or something.
Right.
They're all just sort of the same bar of soap, you know, but with a much better exhaust note. But
yeah.
It just sort of looked like, I couldn't tell what that was unless if I was next to it, if I got behind it or in front of it, I could see the badge.
It's getting kind of tough to be original with some of these body styles, especially in the SUV world.
Like,
you're right.
How much different does the Lambo really look like from the sporty Audi or the sporty BMW?
Right.
Like,
or to your point, Porsche Macan and Alfa Romeo, Stelvio and Maserati, whatever, Levante or...
We're looking at the picture. You see what I'm talking about now, Maxipata? Like, it's got an element of that, and it's sort of it's sad, but it's kind of the same weirdo vibe.
Yeah, the grill especially, like that, just that front grill.
Yeah, it's great. It's Rolls. It's whatever. I'm sorry. It was like every once in a while there's a super hot chick who reminds you of an ugly chick, but she's not ugly. It's just she has like some of the weird characteristics, and when you see her, you think of the ugly chick.
Yeah,
I don't know. I just walked past the Rolls, and I had this weird fleeting. I didn't tell you about it. I didn't write it down in anything.
No.
I just went, kind of looks like, reminds me of something.
Yeah.
And that was all.
Well, open the doors, and you see
you're
the difference.
Cured.
You see the difference. But
are we still talking about the ladies?
Twin turbo V12 from BMW. 570, I don't know, 2-ish horsepower.
More torque.
Oh my gosh, 600 something, 618, 17, something like that. But just, it's quiet, super quiet.
How many liter?
and 6 points. Right.
So it's awesome.
Yeah, it's awesome. And I've got the
I gotta say, is the buy? I don't know what it's 6. Like for
7.
The rolls.
6.75 liter.
6.75
is so smooth.
Is the new buy, whether it's the Lambo or whether it's the Aston Martin Rapide or this or that? I mean,
Aston Martin's having a SUV DBX.
Is the new move just wait 2 years and buy one with 26,000 miles on it and save $100,000?
I mean, yes. By and large, that's sort of like what we would recommend for almost any new car buyer and mm-hmm. for something like this as well, unless you're the older couple or the gentleman or the woman that has sort of wants this lifestyle. You know, mm-hmm. you go to the Rolls-Royce events and, you know, the cocktail hours and you get to order it.
You can't do that when you buy it used.
You buy it used, you get, it's like any other used car. But there's sort of a process of like going in and picking the materials. Like, you know, like if you were building a house or something like that.
I get it. Look, you pay the premium. You want that service. You want it to be bespoke. You want to have you pick out the wood, pick out the headliner.
And keep in mind, Rolls-Royce is still very much a bespoke company. They're as close to a production bespoke company. You want carbon fiber in the interior, they'll do it. You come up with some material you want, they'll do it.
Oh, you bring in a swatch of your wife's wedding dress and they'll match the color.
They'll do it.
And they're in Gaydon and we pass by them and they're near Goodwood. There's also...
When you did the hill climb, they were using them, they had them in camouflage, they were using them as cars up the hill because these things are 4.80 to 60.
Yeah, they also somewhere between London and Rolls-Royce is Aston Martin and their state-of-the-art studios there and manufacturing, and I can't remember
both places I'd like to visit to see the
Aston Martin, just the architecture is absolutely amazing, and it's somewhere, as I recall, because I have been there, somewhere between London and the time you get to Gaydon or the time you get to Chichester, whatever, where Rolls is. I think Aston Martin is somewhere along that drive. So worth it for a factory tour.
It's fantastic. And at some point, we also will be getting the Lamborghini Urus. Urus.
It's too many names.
and it's going to be one's completely different than the other.
I don't like to talk about myself.
What?
And especially when I'm right. But we were walking and talking as we do. I take Phil for a walk. I get on the phone with Matt. We start going over these car auctions and like what's available. He sits at his computer, and then I just kind of do it off memory. Like, check Russo Steel. I think they got a Shelby something and whatever. And he looks it up, and sometimes I screw it up. But we were looking through the whole Hammer Time. Hammer Price app, which
they
we
gotta
love.
Change the name.
The Hammer Price app. And we were looking through, and somehow I had stumbled on to America's Auction or National, International,
Worldwide
Auction. Right. So we were, you know, there's pretty much RM, then there's Gooding, then you get down to kind of Mecum and Russo Steel, and there's some other smaller auctions in Monterey on car weekend. But this is one I'd never seen before. And I was kind of going through it with Matt. And I said to him, Worldwide Auctioneers. And I get it. There's reasons to go with smaller companies. Usually the VIG, maybe they offer you a better deal or you pay less or whatever that is. It's a Thursday only auction that was there, right? I said to Matt, I said, I get it. You got a maybe Mercedes 190 or Pagona Mercedes, a 230 or a Datsun Z car, a 914 Porsche or something. Yeah. But I said to him, Matt, there's a convertible Daytona mm-hmm. on there. And now if it's a factory Daytona convertible, it's $2 million. But it's still a Daytona and it's still $550 to $650. And that's an expensive car for that size auction.
Yeah.
And then I drilled down on the Daytona for a little bit. I was like, if you're looking for 500 plus, you know, $500,000 for your car.
Yeah.
It seems very weird that you take it to that auction. I get it if you, again, have a BMW 2002 and you're trying to get $62,000 for it and you want to save some of the percentage, VIG, whatever. But I was drilling down on that car and I was like, how do you think that works? I mean, how do they get this 500? Again, I think a Daytona convertible conversion, if done properly and done at the right place or whatever,
yeah,
you get, at least historically, you got about the same price as a coupe. It's like $600,000. But that's a $600,000 car, yeah. This little Thursday auction. And Matt's like, yeah, I haven't even heard of it. And I'm like, if you own that car and you're trying to get $600,000 and Matt's not even heard of it, of the auction, yeah, and we talk about these auctions all day, what are your chances are? Blah, blah, blah. And I just kept going, I don't know. That's a pretty ballsy move. Yeah. I mean, maybe you save a few points, but that's a ballsy move, taking a car that's over $500,000 or whatever. I was looking last night,
yeah,
and I was like, yeah, just going to kind of glance price through hammer price and see what everything, whatever. And I was skimming through America's auction or whatever, and it got to Ferrari convertible Daytona, withdrawn.
Withdrawn.
And I was like, of course, because I focused on that car. I was like, I don't know why.
With questions in your head immediately. That's why.
This is 3 days before the auction. And I was like, what's up?
Yeah. What's going on?
What's up? Why is that there? Who did that? Yeah. Why is that there? Who's going to take that? No, withdrawn. Now, I didn't focus on any of the other cars, and then none of the other cars were withdrawn. I just focused on that one.
Yes. So we did question Dana Meekham's GT40 Roadster, which was oddly withdrawn or very casually sort of not.
Yeah, we were kind of questioning.
Like, what's going on? Why is it the last thing in the auction and the last thing in the catalog? Does he not really want to sell? Like, it was just weird the way it was already.
Agreed.
You know, like, not going to be super hyped.
It is weird that that car.
That is weird. I mean, not weird that it was withdrawn. I mean, it was weird that it was there in the first place.
Yeah. So you're saying that the market is down.
The market overall was down. I think I forgot what the number was, 23%, something like that. A significant
drop
in the market, and maybe it's a little bit of leveling. These things go up and down. We like any good investment, you got to look at 10 years
big picture
or something. Yeah.
Right. All right. Let me hit Geico. Everyone's got the to-do list. How about you'd save a bunch of money on your auto insurance?
Yeah.
Well, go to Geico, man. Geico.com. 15 minutes, you could be saving 15% or more on your auto insurance. Take that extra money, put it in your pocket. It's going to be the most rewarding thing you do all day. That is Geico at Geico.com. Spend a couple minutes and see just how much you could be saving on your auto insurance.
Can we talk for a second about this Porsche electric car, the Taycan?
Yeah.
So you and I think last year at Monterey, they had the Porsche Mission E concept car, the white electric car that we walked around, and they showed you sort of the exterior stuff and explained the battery and the charging and how it's going to be different. Here's the concept car. Here's a photo we have. We'll put it up at carcastshow.com.
Looks good.
And so this evolved into what they call the Taycan, T-A-Y-C-A-N. And the official debut of this car is at, I forgot which auto show, something in Europe, coming up in a few weeks. So now Porsche is saying, hey, check out the interior shots. And also we've been testing it at the Ring. And they said, oh, it was the fastest production electric sedan. Although I don't know if there's many electric sedans on the Ring, so
Nürburgring.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So here we are. Here's the vehicle, all sort of camouflaged up.
Mm-hmm.
And like any concept cars that goes to production, it's goofy mirrors and things like that. And every car company is like, we want to use cameras, but no government will let us yet. And they're like, we're so far ahead with the camera side mirrors, you know, but we can't because no government will let us do it. But that's an argument, I guess, for another day. So it ran 7 minutes, 42 seconds for this car. But it's not, you know, it has to have Porsche DNA, but is it meant to be a Tesla fighter? Is it meant to be whatever? So I don't know where it falls in the world of electric cars, but here's a few times at the Nürburgring in that 742 range. A Porsche 911 Turbo S ran a 741.2, and a Cayman GT4 ran 742, almost exactly the same time as the Porsche Taycan. And, mm-hmm. and a 911 GT3 ran a 742.
Yeah.
Right? And the Murcielago 742.
Right. Right? So we're all there.
That's impressive. It's
faster than a Z06 Corvette.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, by point, you know, 1/10 of a second or whatever, but it's quick.
It is quick. And I mean, we're going to get into at some point, like its range and charge time and all that other stuff.
Look, but we're there. I mean, we're almost there. I was walking with Sonny the other day and we were walking down the street and he spotted a BMW 8.
I-8.
Yeah. That was parked in a driveway. And he's like, hey, Dad, that's a pretty cool looking car. Yeah. And I was like, I agree. It has 17 miles of fucking range. Yeah. 17 miles of plug-in range. Yeah. Like,
Sonny got way more than that on an electric bike at Monterey.
I know. I live 11 miles from where I work. And if, God damn it, if I could get my car, come here to work and do my work and go home. It's not like I swing by the supermarket or the Y or anything. I just come here, yell at people for an hour or two, and then I just go home. If I could fucking make that and then just go home and plug it in, I would do it, but I can't on that car.
It's the i8 is sort of, I think, has struggled to find its niche because it's not fast enough to meet that performance look.
It looks
but doesn't
cool.
have enough range to fall into that. You should buy it because it's electric.
But we're electric. On the 0 to 60 part, we're there and then some.
Yeah.
On the
not
top,
necessarily with that car specifically, but sure.
Right. On the top speed, I don't know. We'll get there, but the top speed is highly overrated. It's pretty much, it's just bragging rights. It's really about the getting up the freeway on ramp. We're there with the electric cars in the 0 to 100 or 120 or whatever. The range, we're getting there fast, and, you know, infrastructure and technology, I mean, we'll be there faster. I don't know why in this modern era BMW offers a car with an 18-mile range on plug-in. And I know that fucking part where they go, well, yeah, but then the diesel generator kicks in and stuff. Like, yeah, okay, but I want to plug it in overnight and get in the next day and be able to get to work and back.
Yeah,
that's all. Well, you can plug it in at work. Yes, I could run an extension cord out of the window.
Right.
And by the way, if I plugged it in for 3 hours, it'd have 2.7 miles added to it. I don't want to do that.
Even these hybrid cars that are plug-in hybrids, there's the traditional hybrid. You don't plug it in and it charges the battery and all that other stuff. The plug-in hybrid frustrates me because of the short range, and I feel like I'm not getting good use of the car the way I'm supposed to. Even driving the Volvo, the SUV, the XC90 hybrid, and had like, I don't know, 21-mile, 27-mile, and it kept getting down, and I was like, oh, now I got to feel like I got to plug it in or put it in charge mode.
Could we get here? Like, here's what I'm going to give you my dream vehicle, not the architecture of it, but what I'm looking for. I would like a pile of solar panels on the roof of my house. Mm-hmm. I would like a couple of those battery walls.
Yeah.
I know Tesla kind of makes one, but I think, I don't know, Samsung or something, or one of those companies, Hitachi or something. Somebody makes one too.
To make the battery backups for your
house. I'd like to have a nice battery wall, a pile of solar panels on top of my house, and a vehicle that had an engine in it that was powered by gasoline that had a small hopper tank of, you know, 6 gallons or something like that, but that I could plug in and get 100 miles of range on a full charge. And if I wanted to continuously just plug it in twice a week or three times a week, I could continuously run it on electricity, and I would really never have to go to the gas station again unless I went on a longer range journey. That short vehicle range, doesn't exist, to the best of my knowledge.
The short-range plug-in hybrid, which seems to be the norm, I don't like the idea that now you have to plug it in and go to the gas station.
That's what I'm saying. Like, I get the part where the engine has to kick over, you know, once a week just to get the juices flowing. I get the part where you might have to add some Stabil to the fuel because it's sitting in there for a year or whatever. I kind of get that part. But what I'm saying is I would like to – my biggest issue is – I don't know, Max Zapata, what is the longest range plug-in hybrid vehicle?
Yeah, or PHEV.
Now, here's the problem. They're going to go 626 miles because the engine kicks in after I just mean – can we run it on just plug-in?
Yeah.
And why am I making this up? And why is this exotic? Like, I like the engine. I like the backup part of the engine. I like the extended range. Oh, we're going to Vegas. We're going to use the engine. But 97% of my driving is just from my house to here and back.
Yeah.
And I never want to go by the gas station
now,
again.
Wasn't that Fisker's plan? His Karma plan was the opposite. Instead of having the big engine with the little electric motor and battery for 17 miles. His idea was you go 200 miles or something at the time. And then he had the little four cylinder, like little hopper engine, if you will, from GM, you know, sitting in the fender going, oh, but you won't run out of battery because we can charge the battery on the fly. Like that's what we need. By the way, if you're BMW and you own some really fantastic BMW motorcycles, why not? How come we're not just running like the little motorcycle engine to keep that battery going, you know, so you can get that extended range? Or if you're Audi and you own Ducati.
Oh, does Audi own Ducati?
I believe so, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Yeah.
Mm. This is electric range only for hybrids. So you can see BMW i3.
Right. There's the new i3. So the i3 is as close to what I think Fisker Karma was trying to do. It's got the little engine to charge the battery, right? Volt was trying to do that as well.
Right. The Chevy Volt's got 53 range, and the BMWs have 126. 126 is perfectly acceptable. I can get to work and back like the whole week on a plug-in, unless you're like Garagus's wife, who just plugs hers in every single night, and I just go, where are you going? And she's like, I go into Pasadena and get my nails done. And I'm like, then just plug it in on Monday and you don't have to plug it in again until the next Monday. She's like, I like to plug it in every night. And I'm like, you don't leave this neighborhood. You may go to Pasadena. That's 6 miles from here.
Yeah.
And then you come home. This thing gets 300 range. Why is it plugged in? She has a Tesla, not an X,
the S.
She has the S. And I'm like, she's funny. She's like, because I plug it in. I want it plugged in.
All right.
And I was like, I like that. I like, by the way, pardon the pun, I like that wiring. Don't get me wrong, but I'm still like, you're kind of defeating your purpose here.
Oh, unless Garagos got all those solar panels on the roof and he's off the grid.
Nah, I don't think he does.
There was a bunch of cars missing from that list you just showed, obviously, but like i8 and
yeah, the i8 is 7 miles.
Yeah, you know, like they don't even make the list.
we just showed you the bottom half of the list. We could put the full one up.
The
i3 seems pretty good. My sister has one, and that's fine.
Did you buy it?
No. So, you know, that's a car that'll plug it in, get you 126. Here, I'm kind of looking for a little less of a box. You know, something that's got a little more going to it.
Something with a little more flash or something to it. But anyway, let me tell you guys a little bit about Brembo. Mm. We love our friends at Brembo. I got them on the M3. You got them on a couple of the race cars. We built some of those Brembo racing kits for the cars, working with those guys. Well, 60-0. That's the number to pay attention to. Brembo has been stopping champions on the track as well as drivers like you and me on the street for over 50 years. Brembo, they're the world leader in braking systems, and they have made replacing brakes on your everyday vehicle even easier. I was with a friend of mine this weekend looking at brakes on her Infiniti, and she's like, I need to do the brakes. And I said, let's do it. Let's go to BrembostoreUSA.com and buy some stuff. She said, I don't have Brembos on my car. And I said, that's okay, because they have rotors and brake pads for everything out there. So whether it's Asian, European models, domestic, subcompact cars, or full-size pickups, you can go to BrembostoreUSA.com to buy genuine Brembo OE equivalent brake components, whether it's UV-coated brake discs, low-dust premium ceramic brake pads, or high-temperature brake fluid. Just go to BrembostoreUSA.com now and get the brakes, which have been the choice of champions for over 50 years. You can go there, use code CARCAST10, and get 10% off your first purchase. Go to BrembostoreUSA.com.
Love those guys.
CARCAST10 is the code.
All right. So what else we spotted out there? The sales were down. The race cars remain pretty solid. A lot of the Italian stuff's kind of flattened out. Maybe Porsche's flattened out. I guess a lot of the street car stuff has kind of flattened out a little bit.
But the all across the lineup, and even some of the big money cars are flattening. You know, I think people are sort of seeing what's going on there, and some of those big money cars are reaching a cap, you know, at least slowing down a little bit. Mm-hmm. There's a, it's always amazes me when we go to these auctions, you know, how many of these cars that are 8 million, 12 million, 15 million, and how many, like, they're always getting bids. There's a lot of people with a lot of money out there buying cars.
Yeah. The market, it seems like a good time to get in if you're looking for anything front engine V12 Italian of a 60s or early 70s vintage. The prices have dropped and they flattened out, and they don't seem to be going lower than what they are now. They've just been flat. And now's the time, if you're toying with that, to kind of get in.
But the sellers need to be aware of this. The sellers, you guys, look, there's a lot of cars that are you're asking 400 for, and they're not getting, you know, more than 310. And you have a choice now. You either need to sell it for the lesser amount, or you need to hold on to that car for longer. But now's not the time to get pissed off at everybody because you're only getting 310 for a car you thought was 400 and change.
Right? Also,
like that's the way it works.
The bring a trailer stuff is working pretty well. Their premium auction stuff's working pretty well.
Seems
I think
we're
talking about a Porsche 962 where it didn't have much history. And I was saying, I was saying to you, that's 900 to $1 million, for a Porsche with very limited history. And I think it got 960 on bring a trailer. So that's basically $1 million car on bring a trailer. And that's a good price for that car.
And how did our 93 Cobra, our teal Cobra do? Ooh,
it was $23,000 the last I checked.
It went for $24,400.
Why do I waste my time with you, stupid Cobras?
What?
I keep an eye out, man. There's a Typhoon on there too, man.
I know you always give me shit about these cars, but you notice them all over the place more sooner than I do. Every Cyclone, Typhoon, Grand National,
I
Cobra,
marvel. I look at it like I look at the homeless or litter. I just look at it and go, God damn, what have we done?
It's like we're on a road trip and a bad song comes on and you turn it up and you go, listen to how terrible this song is.
That's the majesty of me. I celebrate the horrible. I've seen movies I hate way more times than I love.
Yeah.
That's the majesty of me. So this thing ended up going for
24.4, and as people got into the comments and talked about it, it turns out, although it's a very nice car and it's low miles, it did have a life where there was more mods, and they end up reversing the mods and kind of doing a thing. So, well bought, nice car. Look, somebody on eBay is, you know how eBay, they like to throw out batshit crazy numbers just to see what happens. I think somebody has one up there for $73,000. And right. I don't know why. Because a Cobra R model sold for 120 at Barrett Jackson. They made 107 of it, and the car was still wrapped in plastic.
eBay's got to do a
eBay's bullshit.
They got to do a little better vetting job, because like if you ever go, like what I'll do with eBay sometimes is there's 200 million cars. So I'll go, well, let's see if someone threw a Mura up there or a Gullwing or something. So when it does the search results, they'll do like location, distance, price, and I'll just go most expensive to cheapest. Mm-hmm. So it'll vet out all the stuff, and you'll see if someone threw up a 935 or, like I said, a Gullwing or something. So I'll do it at the top. Every time is a Chrysler K car that someone wants $8 million for. And I'm like, okay, that's a goof. You've got to figure this stuff out. There's no such thing in your algorithm. If you see Chrysler and K car 1981, don't let someone put it up there for $11 million.
I just don't know when eBay sort of shifted away from being like the cool place to buy bargain shop stuff, use cylinder heads, whatever. And I think just like Craigslist came into the world, and then eBay started allowing like all these stores and dealers to participate. It was no longer just, you know, the everyman just posting stuff.
Right.
So you can put shit up there just for tire kicking. But
also, I think what happened with eBay is like you'd go, you know, I'd type into search results like Lamborghini, Mura, Nardi steering wheel, and then a whole bunch of like Chinese aftermarket Pep Boy stuff would like come popping up, and stupid super bad stick shift knobs that were Pep Boy stuff. And they're like, what is all this doing up here? I said Lamborghini, Nardi, Mura, like, and it's like piles and piles of just sort of junk from the Pep Boys aisle.
Yeah.
And it's like, why am I combing through all of this?
Because when they put those listings up, anybody can type in whatever keywords
they
want.
Obviously.
And it just screws up the
whoever's
algorithm.
Out of China selling super cheap, bad knockoff steering wheels, this goes, anyone who says Lamborghini is going to find our wheel. Look, I get what they're doing. I want to know what eBay's doing.
Yeah, eBay's not doing anything.
Why aren't they vetting a little bit more? And then you start going through like the same pile, and you're looking for something specific, like a valve cover for a Lambo engine or something, you know, a brake cylinder or something like that. And you're just getting piles and piles of Nouveau knockoff Chinese
junk.
Tons of crap. All right. On a sad note, Jessie Combs died. She was from Mythbusters.
She was on the Power Block, a series of shows a while ago, Overhauling.
She
and I have bumped into each other and spoke at a number of events. We didn't know each other well. A few years back when I went out to Thermal and drove the F1 car, she was out there with us and drove with her. And, you know, we like I said, we went to a few events and stuff and met up, you know, got a chance to meet
her. How old was she, Max Pata?
I want to say 39.
39.
Jesus.
Yeah, she's a skilled builder and fabricator, too. Represented the American Welding Society, designed a lot of women's welding gear.
Mm. Yeah. She was a badass.
She was trying to set a land speed record?
Well, I think she already had it. So she was already, like, the fastest woman in the planet. She was 487. Well, yeah.
So she held the title fastest woman on four wheels after breaking 398 in 2013. And then attempting to beat her previous record, attempted it as recently as last year. She managed a 483.2 mile per hour shakedown run before mechanical problems ended the attempt.
And do you think she was shooting for 500? I feel like that's your number.
In the world of records, I think you're shooting for 488 if she's got 487.
Well, she wants the record, but I mean, you know how people go. They go, like, I want to say 500. Like, I want to say 500.
Yeah. But so this is a missile with a tire on it.
And there was a mechanical failure?
But they haven't released any more details than that.
And she just
as
died.
Recording.
Just died.
That's what it said. Right.
And where was this?
Oregon.
Yeah, a dry lake in Oregon.
Where is that dry?
I don't know.
I'm not familiar with that. God, well, man, that's a
also,
ballsy
she,
chick
she
who
ran
lived
Baja,
that life.
I think she ran Baja and won there, and I think she did King of the Hammers, and I think they sort of called her Queen of the Hammer.
That's right.
Because she won there as well. Just like, she's just a badass driver. She was a badass chick, and like you said, fabricator and welder, and was on MythBusters and I don't know, Extreme 4x4 or whatever the shows were, but and hosted a bunch of SEMA stuff and their banquet. So I don't know. It's very sad. She was always very sweet when I got a chance to meet her, and I know she's done a lot for the industry and a lot for women who want to be in the industry. I want to say, which, like, first season of Overhaulin', she was like straight out of like Wyotech or something, and Chip brought her on the show, or the producers brought her on the show, and she was part of the, you know, season one build team.
Alvor Desert in Oregon. Who knew there was a desert in Oregon? I had no idea.
You say Oregon, I don't think flat.
Or desert, but yeah. Anyway, she was a badass and the real deal. And, you know, we always hate it when someone from the community goes, and especially the real deals, you know. And the real deal sometimes will get you.
Now, did you see her last tweet or second to the last tweet? I'm sure Chris can find it, but she was gearing up to go in the car, basically walking out to try to set a record in this missile.
Right.
And she wrote a very sort of enlightening, it says, it may seem like a crazy walk directly into the line of fire. Those who are willing are those who achieve great things. People say I'm crazy. I say thank you. And it's her walking to this rocket ship. So I don't know, just very, very sad. And already the amount of people just sort of sharing their experiences with her is fantastic, that she's getting a lot of attention, a lot of love.
Well, you know, if you they say you die doing what you love, and she was into it, man.
Yeah.
And you have to respect that. And you think about all those who don't and are sort of, you know, I think we all hate the posers of the world, the ones who pass themselves off with a lot of jewelry and tattoos and stuff and weird facial hair as the person. Yeah. But as much as we hate the imposters, we love the real deals.
Yeah.
And it's sad when they pass. All right, take care of a little, what do I got? Oh, I got Castrol?
Yeah, it's you. Okay. Just wrap it up with Castrol.
All right, stronger under pressure. Engines can lose up to 10% of performance due to friction. Castrol Edge with fluid titanium transforms under pressure. Keep the metal parts from rubbing and robbing power. Three times,
fool.
Stronger than leading full synthetic against viscosity breakdown. Edge formula always exceeds the highest industry standards. It is new and improved. It's Castrol Edge. All right, Portland tonight, come say hi. We'll be there and come out during the day and bring your car, man. We're showing cars and we're hanging out with Mario Andretti. We're doing a live car cast.
I think you guys are judging some cars, too.
We are judging some cars.
Well, I'm always judging cars. I saw so that judging. Rolls Royce and said it looked like a London cab.
That teal Cobra on Bring a Trailer.
Judge some more. Also, you can go to AdamCarolla.com for all the live shows. I'm doing stand-up everywhere. Shift and Steer, available on iTunes and Podcast One as well. And support the show. Go to CarCastShow.com and follow us, please. And until next time, it's Adam Carolla for Matt the Moderator, DeAndrea, saying keep the air in the spare and the bag in the wheel.
For the latest updates and call-in times, follow the show on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at CarCast Show. If you'd like to write in, fill out the form on CarCastShow.com. And don't forget to give us a nice rating on iTunes. CarCast is a Corolla Digital production and is produced by Chris Loxamana. For more information, visit CarCastShow.com.